What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 106 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I'm your host, Luke Lewis, and today I'm joined by super special guest to the show, freelancer extraordinaire Cam Hawkins. Welcome to the show, Cam.
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. I've been a longtime fan of your work, and it was awesome to meet this past PAX West when we were both on friend of the show Jacob McCourt's video game trivia panel. So it's been a long time in the making to get you on the show, so I'm happy we could finally do it and chatting about a very cool game with God of War Ragnarok recently releasing, and we haven't had a chance to talk about it on the podcast, so glad we could do it with you.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate you reaching out and asking me to come on and talk about it. I have many thoughts, so...
Excellent. Yeah, this is our last episode for the year 2022, so we're closing it out with a big game, and I'm excited to get right into it. So this is a special episode today. We won't be doing any... We've got the news breakdowns. We're just going to jump right into our title track main topic with our God of War spoiler cast. I thought we'd take a minute or two at the head of the episode just to give some spoiler-free impressions for those that haven't gotten a chance to play the game yet. So, Cam, I'm curious, what were your hype levels going into God of War Ragnarok, and then overall, what did you think of the game?
Yeah, God of War is a very funny series, because I really love God of War, but, like, whenever a new game comes out, I'm not like, let's go, like, a new God of War game, but I really sure. do love God of War. It's a very weird relationship that I have with the franchise, and, like, you know... I really enjoyed 2018, not as much as most people, but still thought it was a very, you know, obviously incredibly well-made game. And going into Ragnarok, my main thing going into it was I just wanted to know what the story was, right? The way 2018 ends is just like, you sure. know, we see Kratos is, you know, dead. You know, we see Kratos dead through a prophecy, and we're all just like, yo, like, what? That's gonna, like, there's no way that's gonna happen. And I was just very interested to seeing how that was going to play out. So yeah, it was really all the story. I mean, like, you know, for me, the gameplay was more or less like, you know, an improvement on the original with some new things implemented. But it was really the story that got me excited for the game.
Yeah, for sure. I think I was definitely in a similar place, very excited for the story. It left off in 2018 in a very interesting place, so I was excited to see where they'd pick it back up. And I really love 2018. I don't know if I would put it as high as most people do either, but I think it was one of those situations where, like, this game is so good, imagine what they could do with a sequel, mm-hmm. especially heading into the PS5. I was interested to see if this would be that technical powerhouse to really show off the system.
Yeah.
But once you got a chance to play it, what did you think of the game overall?
Overall, I think it's a weird thing. Like, I think that I personally enjoyed Ragnarok more because mm-hmm. it gave me what I wanted that was missing in 2018. A lot of the backstory of Kratos, a lot of the you know, characterization of Kratos that was presented in Ragnarok was what I wanted in 2018. That just, like, wasn't, you know, it just wasn't really there. And even so, Ragnarok doesn't go as far, as deep as I wanted it to go, to certain levels that I thought were, like, I still think are crazy that it hasn't, like, certain things haven't been addressed or touched upon. But I think that 2018 was a lot more, condensed on, like, what it was trying to accomplish. It was an ambitious game in the sense of, like, its set pieces and the action and stuff like that. But with this sense of, like, hey, there's this adventure where you're trying to get to Jotunheim, get to the tallest peak, and, like, you know, scatter her Faye's ashes. I think it was just a lot more focused on what mm-hmm. it was trying to accomplish. While I think that Ragnarok narratively was a bit of a mess. And I think that it tried to, it very much felt like it was trying to fit a second and third game into one game. And I think that really shows throughout the game. And there are just some like logistical things. I think that the narrative, there's a lot of things that exist in the narrative simply for the sake of the story that they want to tell, not in a way that feels like natural. It's like, oh, this character is doing this because they want to do this, or like, oh, you know, without getting into the nitty gritty of it yet, it's like, oh, why did this person do this? And it's like, oh, it's because like they wanted this thing to be a big part of the story that ultimately didn't do anything. It was just like, there's a lot of things I was just like, you could just really tell, you could see the threads of like what they wanted to, the story that they wanted to tell, but you could see like the logistical question marks that at least I had, that they had to just have the player just accept to get to those points. And I just, that didn't really vibe with me.
Yeah, I can definitely respect that. Once we get into full spoilers, I'm very curious what specific story beats you're referring to. That'll be interesting. I'm in the camp of, I definitely think I prefer Ragnarok over 2018. I do agree with you that I think the narrative is messier, but I almost like that in a sense. And I think there are those plot hole moments that we'll get into, but I think for me, the individual character arcs in Ragnarok just really went above and beyond for me, whether it was in the side quests or the main story. I think, you know, I look at Atreus as a key example of in 2018, I kind of could care less about that character to some extent. I found him kind of annoying in the later half of the game, and I think that was kind of an intentional part of the writers trying, like, once he found out he was a god, he feels unstoppable and he gets kind of cocky. But in this one, I felt like he had a really cool character arc and ended up being one of my favorite characters of the game. I think about characters like Brock and Sindri and their journey through the game, obviously Freya. Like, I can just think of so many small little interactions that weren't even huge character moments, but just little lines of dialogue here and there as you're moving through the world, that really stuck out to me as like genuine, well-executed writing that we don't see a ton in games. So I think that's where the game really shines for me.
Okay.
But I think, obviously, you know, still spoiler-free, I think we both recommend you check out this game, and I think there's a lot to discuss with the narrative in a lot of interesting ways. So let's take the gloves off. Spoilers abound. Let's dig right into it. But looking at the game overall, I'm very curious. We've gotten into kind of generally what you thought of the narrative, but with spoilers in mind, do you want to kind of dig into some of your criticism or your thoughts surrounding the game?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's a lot of things, and like, you know, I'll try my best not to get sidetracked, but...
No, you're okay. I think my idea to structure this conversation was we'd start with kind of a general conversation, we could highlight some specific moments that we each want to talk about for various reasons, and if we feel the need, we can kind of work our way chronologically through sections of the game, depending on where the conversation goes.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was just going to talk about, like, how we know that, well, we can't talk about the beginning. In the beginning of the game, right, Odin's like, hey, I don't want to fight. I don't want, Ragnarok to happen. So let's be peaceful. Let's, like, not, you know, cause any stuff. And, like, that's just another thing to start in the beginning. It's like, I know that they had, like, they had the things to set up the magical barrier, so like that basically no one could come in, like, enter, right. You know, they couldn't come to the house and stuff like that. But I'm also just like, but like there was a time between the end of the game to then where like at any point they could have just came by and like, you know, done something. And again, you could like, it there is like this ongoing theory about like how like a lot of this was just like a big master plan by Odin. But for me, I'm just like, nah, I don't buy that. So like, you know, so it's like, what? Odin and Thor could have showed up like at literally any point between the end of 2018 and the beginning of Ragnarok. But that's just like a, that's like a small thing. Even sure. It's a big thing, but it's a small thing that, that bothers me. But then like, you know, we know that, Tyr, we learn from the prophecy that Tyr is the one that is supposed to like lead the armies to Asgard for Ragnarok, all that stuff. And it's just like, but then, and then originally for the longest time, I was just like, but then why would Odin pretend to be Tyr? Because that would just, that would just follow the prophecy, right? That would just like it's technically Tyr leading the army until like everything that happened with Brock,
right?
And then, but then someone brought it up. It was like, it was, you know, it was probably to lead Atreus to Asgard to help Odin with the mask. And that's the thing, is just like that's again one of the big examples that I have for this game. It's just like that feels like just set up to get Atreus to Asgard for the mask, when the mask, you know, at the end of the day, literally meant nothing. Like, it was just a MacGuffin, and that just like was really upsetting. Like, it just like that whole part, those whole portions of the game, I'm just like, what am I doing? Like, why are we doing this? Like, you know, there was good back and forth between Atreus and Thor during those moments, but like, I was just, and that's like another thing I'll go on later, but I was like, why is this a thing? And you know, I expected that it was ultimately not going to be anything, and it was. And it was just like, man, that was really disappointing. And I think, well, Luke, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack with what you said. I agree and I disagree, I guess I will say, with some of it.
Sure.
I hear what you're saying, and like those are fair points. I think in the moment they didn't resonate with me in that way, like the plot hole aspects, if you will. To me, like, for example, with Odin and the mask and that whole plot arc, I kind of thought it was more symbolic of Atreus's journey, that in the end it ended up meaning nothing. Like, it was more of like, you're right that it was a MacGuffin and that it didn't amount to something, but I personally didn't need it to, because I was, like I was saying at the top of the show, so invested in those character journeys, and like Atreus and Kratos and their relationship developing throughout the game was like what was getting me through the game and keeping me invested in the story. And I'm also thinking about the point you brought up with Odin posing as Tyr, which I actually thought was like a very cool twist that I didn't see coming.
Oh, it was specifically with the broad section.
Yeah,
for sure. And right. I think that like at the time I was just like, oh shit. But again, like when I beat the game,
reflecting on it, yeah, no, reflecting on it,
I was just like, wait a minute, why was he Tyr? Like, and then I was on another podcast talking about the game, They mentioned like, oh, they, you know, it might have been because Odin wanted Atreus to, like, you know, without knowing it, lead Atreus to go to Asgard to help Odin with the mask. Right. And I'm just like, I'm on board with that idea. Because
the reason that idea makes sense to me is in that scene before Brock dies, Tyr/Odin is essentially like, hey, we should just go to Asgard right now. I have the back door entrance. We can just go. And everybody's like, well, we're not like prepped or anything. And he's like, no, we're good. We'll just go. That was, in my mind, looking back at it, Odin being like, I'm going to trick everybody. I'm going to get everybody killed. And then Atreus is going to have nothing left but to help me.
Yeah.
Was kind of how I read that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. But you were saying more. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just think I feel like a more positive read on the points you're bringing up, which is totally fair. I love the kind of the discussion I think we're about to have, but yeah, I think it's those small character moments and the growth that I saw there that kept the moment-to-moment interesting. And to see Kratos begin to trust Atreus more throughout the journey and kind of his struggle with that. And
that just
really worked for me, I think, is kind of where I'm at with it.
Sure. But okay. And this is, okay, this is another thing that's like, that annoyed me.
For
the first like half of the game. And it's two things, and they're both regarding Atreus.
Okay.
The first one is just like, how he literally says out loud, like, I shouldn't go to Asgard. Like, that's following the prophecy. And if we follow the prophecy, then Ragnarok's going to happen. Literally a minute later. All right, Odin, take me to Asgard. What? You literally just said that you don't want to go to Asgard. And it just felt so, like, random. Like, it didn't feel like he talked him, like, it didn't really feel like he talked himself into it, or like he said something that made sense to like lead to his decision. It just kind of felt like, okay, we're going to Asgard now. And I don't, that did not jive with me at all. And then the other thing was, like, for the first half of this game, I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, is Atreus stupid? Because, like, I get it, like, I get it, like, he's a young kid, but also, like, with the stuff that he went through in 2018, like, you know, and being raised by Kratos, like, sure, he can be 13 years old, but, like, he should have the maturity of, like, a 17, 18-year-old at the minimum. And, like, just the fact that, like, the amount of times that Kratos is just like, what's going on? And he's just like, why don't you just trust me? I'm like, just tell him! Just tell him the truth! Yeah.
I'm definitely with you with that. There were several moments where he was like, it's too complicated. I'm like, you could try. You could give it
It's not that complicated.
Yeah.
It's just like, and it just felt like the writers, like, withholding the information just to get to certain points and, like, just to go certain ways with the plot. And that was the problem that I had. It felt like, you know, they made Atreus say, like, why don't you just trust me? And I get, like, that the game is about, like, oh, you know, a parent and child, like, trusting each other. I get that. But, like, it could have been done better and in a way that didn't feel like you're like, force-feeding the plot to go in a specific direction. And, yeah, so that was something that I was just, like, Atreus was, like, blowing, like, giving me the biggest headache. I was just like, dude, why are you acting like this? And I get it, he's a kid, but man, that was just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's fair, and that the frustration we all felt was definitely a thing. And then you have Kratos on the other hand, who's like, I am trying to trust you, but, like, come on, dog. You're not, like,
yeah,
you're
he's not reciprocating.
Right,
he's not.
Yeah.
Atreus wasn't. He was like, I am trying to trust you. He's like, literally, he's just like, I'm still following you, even though I don't get what's going on. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, oh, God. Yep. Atreus in the first half of this game was kind of unbearable for a lot of it for me.
I can understand that. I'm curious, so we've highlighted the key plot points that kind of didn't resonate with you. Were there moments in the story that really did speak to you from a narrative point?
I really loved, my favorite part of the entire game was just the scene in the house with Thor and Odin and all of them just talking, like, that was just like, let me watch a movie of just y'all talking, because it was so good. And I, like, you know, I know the Game Awards are already over, but, like, for me, and, like, you know, Christopher Judge is phenomenal, but, like, for me, the dude who plays Odin, he was the guy, he was
Richard Schiff.
Yeah. Richard Schiff, like, whenever he was on screen, I was just like, do your thing, dog. Do your thing.
He was incredible. Yeah, Claire and I are huge fans of The West Wing, and he was a prominent character on that show. Yeah, and I somehow missed that he was in this game. So when he appeared in that opening scene, I was like, holy shit! Like, I was just, like, super excited on that note. But, like, yeah, his performance was absolutely stellar, and it's cool to see, like, longtime Hollywood actors, like, buy into games narratives. I've heard interviews with him since his performance in the game, and he said, like, he really enjoyed it. He didn't know games narratives were capable of the performance he gave as Odin, and I just thought that was really cool. And yeah, I totally agree that the opening scene, like, leading into that conversation with Odin, the subsequent fight with Thor, like, just such a cool opening that I think coming off of 2018, that was like this kind of cool slow build. This was like we're gonna throw you right into it, and it's immediately gonna grab your attention in a really
but I will also say it kind of hurt the game too, because I think that similarly to, in my opinion, the fight with Baldur in the beginning of 2018,
there's definitely a parallel here of similar. It's
exactly, I thought that was the best boss fight in 2018, and I also think that, like, this segment of Ragnarok was for me the best segment of the game of Ragnarok, because I love that scene going straight into that fight
for sure.
Was really, really great, and it's just like, it, you know, it starts you off with such a high ceiling that you have to overcome, and there were great boss fights outside of it, but it just didn't hit. Like, even like Thor's, and you know, I definitely want to talk about Thor in general in the future, but like, Thor's final fight was just way weaker than the first fight, which was a disappointment. And I think that, I think that they felt like, okay, you know, a lot of people talked about how great the beginning against Baldur was. We gotta, like, you know, surpass that. And they did. But it's also, and I think that, like, a lot of the big issues with 2018, with, like, the lack of variety in the boss fights and stuff like that, they definitely fixed that in Ragnarok. There's a lot of great boss fights, but it just didn't hit the same as Thor, the first time you fight Thor, in my opinion. So it just, like, never hit that same height, personally. But other really cool moments I really liked, climbing the Asgardian wall was really awesome.
Yeah, visually too, that whole section was really cool.
Yeah, that was very cool. And this is going into the things that I really like that the game did with Kratos that was missing in 2018 for me, was when Kratos was talking to Freya about Calliope and his previous family in Greece and stuff like that. That was what I want. That was like, give me that. Like, tell, like, I, you know, and the thing, but there was also this weird kind of dissection there, because I thought that, like, when Freya said, like, oh, I know you're a god, da, 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 in the first game, I thought she knew his backstory. And so
I did too at the time. And then, so that was interesting to kind of see that unfold here in the second one.
Yeah, exactly. So that was really great to see, because it was a really smart way as well to get Freya to understand that Kratos has been where she is currently,
for sure,
and letting her accept that he was not at fault for, you know, Baldur's death, and that kind of thing. And I think that the thing that really bothers me, like, this is probably the thing that bothers me the most, more than anything at this point in the series, is that I think it's unacceptable that Atreus seemingly still knows nothing about Kratos's past family. I think that is so, like, wrong. I just don't know why they haven't, like, told him, like, hey, you had a sister, or, like, hey, right, you know, I had a family before you, this is what happened, like, because this whole thing is about, like, trusting each other, and I just like wanted to see Kratos give Atreus his whole self.
Yeah, I can definitely respect that. And two, I think it would lend itself well. Like, I feel like if Kratos was able to effectively communicate what had happened previously, Atreus would be like, oh, I understand why you're overprotective as hell, and you're afraid I'm gonna die, and you're afraid to let yourself, like, unleash violent tendencies, and, like, there's, like, it would all, I think, be more clear to him if they had that level of dialogue. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, there are some great, you know, again, there are some great moments, that, you know, kind of like telling the stories, that are about Kratos, but aren't like, you know, he doesn't like name drop himself or anything like that.
Sure.
And I think, that was, you know, those are really cool storytelling, elements. I think that, the whole promise to Atreus and like that, you know, to each other, and then like how the game ends, it's nice. I don't know, something about the ending of the game, I wanted more. And also I just like I don't know how I feel about Kratos being alive, because it's not even that, like,
I definitely thought he was gonna die. That was like my prediction going into that third act.
And it's not even that I think that, like, because of the expectation, it's per se. I just think that we're in a place where, like, moving forward, like, where does Kratos' story go? Because, like, I can see things happening with Atreus, but knowing that Kratos is alive, I'm just gonna be like, why would I play as Atreus when I can play as Kratos? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's very few characters that are more fun to play as than Kratos. And so, like, you know, again, I've talked about this on a few podcasts, but like, if I was the one in charge of God of War, and like, especially because they made it seem like Ragnarok was going to be the end, like the end, not just like, oh, this is the end of the Norse saga. Like, no, this is the end of God of War.
Well, and that's what the game director has said, because going into development, they had a big discussion about, would this be a trilogy or is this a two-game story arc? And they landed on two games, and that kind of harkens back to your earlier point about how this game feels like it's trying to do games 2 and 3 in one.
Yeah, and I just think that, like, I think that, again, if I was in charge, I would have Kratos die, and then what I would like to see is Atreus go back to Greece and basically walk the sins of his father. And, like, see, like, this is what Kratos was before, like, you know, this is, Kratos is a part of you, like, that kind of stuff. And, like, just kind of see, you know, I don't have, obviously, the complete ins and outs of it all, but I think that would make for a really interesting and compelling narrative, on like, you know, the faults of like your parent and things like that. And so now we're just like, I don't know what the future of God of War is. It's so popular. Like, there's got to be another God of War game, like, in the future.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought, is I think this one sold too well, scored too well, is just being very well received.
Yeah. And
so it's similar to The Last of Us, of, like, Last of Us Part 2, I don't think needs a sequel, but I think we will see something in both of these universes within due time. Might be like next console generation or something, but there's gonna be more.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see God of War for I mean, we already know that their next game is, they still have, if I remember correctly, they have a sci-fi game that they're working on, right? And then a Sony Santa Monica, and then
I think that's the one that Corey supposedly has been, yeah, like, his full attention's been on that.
Yeah, that's the one. He's Eric next, Williams he's directing was on Ragnarok next.
That
yeah.
sounds awesome. I'm excited to see, assuming it's a new IP, that's really exciting to just do something different and see what that studio is capable of.
Yeah, for sure. So I don't see, yeah, maybe in 10 years, maybe. But then also it's just like, man, are you going to get Christopher Judge back for that? Like, I don't know how old the dude is, but I feel like that he's, you know, in that kind of spot where like I could see him come back, or he's like, or he could be like, nah, like I'm kind of a little bit too old for this now. And so I really don't know.
I could even see it. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Or even if Kratos is involved, is all I was going to say. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I could see an Atreus game being compelling if they did a big time jump and he's like full grown adult, stronger, has some different combat capabilities.
Cool, Kratos died and then he inherited the blades and the Leviathan axe. Like, that would be so cool.
It makes sense. Yeah. Honestly, I enjoyed the sections where he teamed up with Thrud, Thor's daughter, and the section with Angerboda. Like, I could see there being something cool there. I know that specifically the Ironwood section was kind of divisive for folks. I thought,
yeah,
from a gameplay perspective, it went on a little too long, but I liked the narrative. I liked the tie-in of him searching for other giants and the world. I thought it was cool.
It just didn't, like, yeah.
That's fair. No, that's totally fair.
Yeah, it just didn't do much for me. Hold on, I want to say, I liked the boss fight. Angerboda's grandmother.
That was epic. Loved that boss fight. Very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, loved that boss fight. But the rest of it, I was just like, okay, like, I get it. You're, like, teaching, Loki more of the giant's history and stuff like that, but it didn't play a whole that big of a part in the overall plot for me. That I was just like, it just, I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, because it was it was basically brought up again when they basically put Odin's soul into it before Sindri smashed it. And I was just like, and then at the end of the game, all right, I'm going to look for the rest of the giants. I'm just like, it just didn't, I don't know. It didn't play a super big role for me, and it just didn't. That's really fair. Yeah.
I liked it in the sense that I do think it's a compelling idea that, like, Atreus doesn't know anything about his father's lineage. He doesn't know anything about his mother's lineage, really, and he wants to learn more about his history. And so when he finds out that there are giants alive, he wants to seek them out. Like, I bought that part of it, and I'm interested to kind of see where that goes. I wish we had gotten to see kind of more of it here. Like, I was hoping for, like, endgame style moment, another portal, all the giants roll in.
And then afterwards
he kind of gets to have those conversations, and I would have had that happen in this game if this was truly the ending. That's why I also think we're gonna see more from God of War.
Yeah, I'm actually I was gonna ask you, what were your thoughts on the Fae sections of the game? Go ahead.
Yeah, I thought they were interesting, but didn't necessarily give me as much information as I was hoping. Like, think by the end, it painted an interesting picture and an interesting motivation and posed some questions, but I would have liked more. I would have liked to see Atreus interact with his mom. I just want to know more about her giant backstory and, like, how she ended up with Kratos. Like, like, that decision process to get there and whatnot, I just find very interesting. And I think hearing about that would have been pretty cool. I did like the fact that we did learn, like, why she was motivated for them to go to Jotunheim, why she, like, how she covered up the mural to not give them the prophecy. Like, I thought that tied everything together in an interesting way, but the moment-to-moment interactions with her, I don't think were, like, one of the strong points for me.
Yeah, I agree. I was just like, all right, that was a scene. Like, I just didn't know what to get out of it, you know what I mean? Like, it was cool that, like, we actually got some interaction, I guess, but it was just not what I really wanted to see. Like, I wanted to see, like, Faye find a injured, you know, as all hell, like, Kratos. And are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah.
Like, an injured as fuck Kratos, and just, like, you know, taking care of her. And, like, I wanted to see the love actually develop. Yeah. And just, like, up, we're together. Up, we got the baby.
Yeah, I'm really curious how they met and how that like progressed, because it just seems so such an odd pairing, and intentionally so, that they would end up together. I will say I liked seeing their banter, like just them like interacting together. Sure. was cool, just because in the first game it like built her up so much as a character of like, your mother wouldn't have wanted this, like, but what was the mother's vibe? So at least we got to see a little bit of that.
Yeah.
There are a couple other moments I want to dig into a little bit that stuck out to me.
Okay.
Specifically going back to, you mentioned Thor as a character.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought he was a really well done character within that character arc space. I thought his struggles with alcoholism and, you know, his relationship to Odin, I thought that was an interesting part of the game. And I liked the kind of culmination of that story with the drunken bar fight when Thrud and Atreus go into the bar, and then that culminates in like this rock bottom moment for Thor. Like, I thought that was a cool section of the game.
Yeah, I think that Thor is like, what we got was great, but I don't think we got enough. I think that his stuff was very short lived, and I do like, because you know, someone brought it up to me, which a very fair point. Like, you don't really see video game characters where like a character is dealing with alcoholism, or like you know, a kid that's dealing with an alcoholic parent and things like that. And that was really cool that we got, you know, to see that in this game. But also, like, I just felt like that this game marketed Thor so hard and he wasn't in the game that much. And that was really,
specifically, I thought it was interesting that Mjolnir was the like collector's edition big set piece, because you're right, we don't see it a whole lot in the game, and it's interesting because it's this like opposing force to the Leviathan axe. And I think the moments that he's in the game are really compelling, but I was very sad when he died, not just because it's sad when a cool character dies, but I wanted more time with him, and I wanted to see him and Kratos and Atreus and Thrud have like more interactions together.
Yeah, and I think that also just his death was so abrupt. I was like, I was like shocked in not a good way. I was like, oh, that's how Thor's going out. Like, I and I'm not saying that he needed to be redeemed, but I think that there should have been his death should have been more eventful. It just felt very sudden, and just like, I don't know. I felt very like empty about it, and I just feel like that there, like, what we got was good, but there was also a big waste of potential there, in what we could have gotten.
Yeah, I can understand that. I thought the final exchange between him and Odin, I thought was very compelling, in a sense of it felt representative of their relationship in a unique way, and it did provide that final push to be like, fuck you, Odin, you're going down in this last boss fight, because what you did was just heinous. And so I think that was like a good motivator for me going into that last fight. But I do agree, it felt sudden, it felt abrupt, and I would have liked more time with that character.
And on top of that, I'm going to say, like, Odin's final boss fight was really underwhelming. I
was surprised that, like, we fought in the same environment, essentially, as Thor. You know what I mean? Like, the first section, the first phase, if you will, too. Like, I thought we would get more verticality. We would get kind of a different space for the fight.
But I also, here's the thing that I do kind of vibe with this idea, that like Odin's boss fight was underwhelming because, you know, he's not a fighter. You know what I mean?
That's kind of what I thought too.
And like, you know, he's not the one to be doing that stuff. And so like, yeah, he is kind of like underwhelming to fight because he normally has other people doing it for him. And again, I vibe with that, but like, you know, when it comes to a boss fight, like a final boss, I mean, like, when you know, when you think of God of War and how great, like, God of War is and known for their boss fights, and you think about, like, some of your other favorite final boss fights of all time, like, it's just it's a little disappointing. And I just, I wish there was more there, you know. And so I think I'm just spoiled. I played some games recently that had some like really incredible boss fights. Like not even like final boss fights, just like you know, just very specific boss fights that like with the like all the narrative that's in given alongside it. It's just like some of the best stuff I've played in video games that I'm just like, again, I feel a little bit spoiled in that sense.
For sure.
But yeah, I just wish that was a little bit better. But again, like I think in general, this game way better suite of boss fights compared to the first game.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I'd throw out a couple in that conversation of, I really like the Heimdall fight. I thought that was very cool. The spear as a weapon, which we haven't talked about, really worked for me. I'm not sure how you felt about it, but I thought it was a nice change of pace. I like a good range weapon, and specifically from like a narrative perspective, I like the fact that in the first phase of that boss fight, you can't get a hit on him, and it's like, what the fuck am I going to do? How am I going to beat this boss fight? And then progressively kind of figuring it out. Does it get a little cheesy when you're using the explosive element on the spear a lot? Sure, but like I thought, like I felt clever solving that, and I thought that like that execution was cool, combining kind of gameplay and narrative.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that you know, we haven't talked about Brock and Sindri really yet, but
no, we should get into them.
That the scene with Brock, like, because here's the thing. Like, when Sindri mentions, like, oh, Brock died, I brought him back, blah, 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 the whole, like, oh, he doesn't have a soul thing now, I was just like, okay, Brock's gonna die in this game. I was just like,
really?
Yeah! Interesting. It was obvious! Okay. Yeah, for me, I was just like,
no, that's fair.
I was like, oh, Brock is dying, like, you know what I mean? So, for me, and then, like, and then when he did the blessing of the spear, I was like, oh, now he's really dying. Like, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that this blue dude is gone. So I was like, I don't know how, but it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very beautiful moment. Because I always like, you know how, like, in the first game, there's always this kind of, like, push and pull between Brock and Sindri and, like, oh, like, who's the better blacksmith and stuff like that? And I always kind of lean towards Brock. I always thought that Brock, like, had a little bit more, like, passion and drive into his craft than Sindri did.
Sure.
And so, like, that was just kind of, like, a little bit of validation towards how I was feeling. I thought it was really, really great, and it was... gave Kratos the, like, opportunity, probably more than most moments in the game, to be a friend to Brock. I don't want to jump to, like, the other side of the spectrum right now. But,
no, you're good.
I really don't like how they left off Sindri's stuff at the end of the game.
Really?
I don't like, because the thing is, like, yeah, Sindri fucked up, but, like, Sindri is one of the least terrible people out of this cast of characters. And it just felt wrong that he was the one that, like, isn't happy at the end of the day. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was a sense of, like, content or, you know, ability to move on with a lot of these other characters, like Freya and, you know, but, like, just him just being so angry. And I get to the point, like, you know, he is like lashing out his anger that is of himself. He's mad at himself, but he's, you know, lashing that out at his friends. But, like, it ending that way just felt like it just felt so like so wrong to me, because I was just like, Sindri's a good person, like, you know what I mean, like he means well, he, like, you know, he wants to help, and like, it's just, again, just knowing like these other characters, what these other characters have done, and all this other, you know, all these other things, and that he's the one that like has a bad ending, like he's not in a good place at the end of that game. I just like it really just like made me upset. And I think, you know, and I've talked to some people saying like, oh, maybe there's going to be a DLC kind of like Lost Legacy, where it's like Atreus trying to earn back Sindri's trust, and they like try and like save Brock again or something like that, or some sort of adventure to have Sindri forgive him. And I'm just like, first off, like, Atreus and Kratos don't owe nothing to Sindri, in my opinion. Like, his decisions led to his results. Like, it wasn't because of Kratos or Atreus, if you ask me. But still, I was just like, it still felt wrong how things ended with Sindri, and I really hope that that's not the end of his story, because it just doesn't sit right with me. Not like on a like a logistical level, but from a like emotional level.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I think Sindri is one of the best characters in the game, and I just really enjoyed his story. And for me, I definitely agree emotionally, I wasn't happy for him. I wish he was in a better place. I wish it had worked out better for him. I think narratively, it was very satisfying to me, and I thought his arc and his kind of descent into darkness worked really well for me. I just think in the first game, he was kind of the happy-go-lucky guy. That's kind of where we start the game with, and just to see him kind of just break down, I thought was pretty symbolic.
Oh, and I hate it, though. You're right. No, I get what you're saying, though.
No, I totally respect what you're saying, 100%. But like for me, I was like, we got to that funeral scene and the true credits start to roll and Sindri's walking away, and I'm like, that's it. That's the game for me. That's this like uneasy tension of like trying to be okay when it's not okay, and like this whole journey. So that just like really worked for me. But I definitely understand what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, because like I kind of have a similar feeling as to how it's actually a similar feeling as to how I felt when I actually wrapped up Xenoblade Chronicles 3 yesterday.
Oh, nice. And
the way it ended, I was just like, it's not fair. I was so upset because of how it ended.
But to me, that's like a sign of good writing. If you're like that passionate about it and you have that level of emotion about it, that's like the writer's doing something right to evoke that.
Yeah, and it did some good things. Like, I did like the idea of, like, Sindri coming out of nowhere and just, like, again, like, bashing Odin's orb. That was really cool. And also it was super effective because they actually show him teleporting away for the first time. That's, like, the first time you see it. Yep. I was just like, oh, shit. Like, that was, you know, because for the longest time, it was just, they would just appear behind something, right?
Sure.
But this time it's like, no. I'm just doing it. And that was really effective. I really loved that moment a lot. But, and you know, he does it again at the funeral, but dang, it's just like, I don't know, man. It's just like, he's like the good guy. And I don't even see it as like, he like fell into darkness. It was just like, he was just the fallout of this, of all this. Like he was the one that took the hits, and I just like, and it wasn't intentional. Like no one like was, you know, no one tried to direct that towards him. He was just, you know, he was in the middle of the gunfire, for lack of a better term. Yeah.
I'm curious to pose a question for you. Would you feel, if Sindri's story went exactly the same way, but Kratos died, and Atreus also had that sacrifice and left in a bad place, so to speak, would that have felt better for you, or would that not have addressed it?
I mean, like,
Because I get what you're saying of, like, it all came down to Sindri in a sense, so I'm wondering, like...
So, like, wait, so would Brock still die and Sindri be upset? Kratos dies and then Sindri's, like, better?
Like, let's say, like, instead of Thor dying, Odin kills Kratos in that moment in some way, and then we end in a similar place, but, like, Atreus is at the funeral... And it's mourning the loss of Kratos and Brock.
I actually really like that parallel, though, because Atreus and Sindri are, you know, our buddies in the beginning.
Yeah.
I don't need them to, like, change the story or anything like that.
Sure. I was just curious.
Yeah, but it is an interesting thought. For sure. I think that we're just at a place right now where we don't know what the future of God of War is, so it's just like this might be the end of Sindri's story and that's how it ends, and you know, that's just something that kind of have to expect. Like, I don't know, it's just kind of like how I feel about Well, I don't want to say it's a one-for-one parallel, but it makes me think about a lot of things, like, with Ellie in, like, The Last of Us Part 2.
I could see it.
But I wouldn't say, you know, it's a one-for-one comparison, and I don't want to make that type of comparison. But no, it's just...
No, I get what you're saying though, that there's, like, there's some parallels.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, like, you know, it's sad to see where Sindri ends up, you know, I hope that that's not the end of his story, is all.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I'd love to see more of that character and have him have some, like, redemption and to come to a better place. I'm curious, kind of zooming out into a gameplay perspective, what did you think of the kind of more open world level design of this one? Did you dig into any of the side quest content?
Oh yeah.
What were your thoughts there?
Yeah, so I thought the world stuff was great. I think is it Vanaheim or Schwarzwaldheim, which is, like, massive. There's one that's, like, just massive. Where you find, like, the dragons and, like,
I haven't done it, but I was also on another spoiler cast with friends of the show, Arsene and Joseph, on the Player Pod, and It's Vanaheim, I believe, where you go after the dog or the animal creature, and then you're, like, taken into a whole nother world. Is this what you're talking about, or am I...
No, it's the one totally where you're different. Trying to find the soldier, like the big dude who, like, jumped off the boat.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Vanaheim. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But yeah, Vanaheim is huge. It's massive. Once you, like, get to the later parts of the game, like, it's, like, it's massive. Regarding the side quests, so, like, and I don't think I've ever said this about a video game, ever. Some of those side quests should have been main quests. Like, they were that, like, could not imagine going back, like main, like, you know, say that I, like, golden lined that game and going to, like, Freya's, like, quest with the wedding and getting the sword and Odin's noose and stuff like that. I could not have imagined playing through that after everything that happens at the end of the game, because it's just like it feels like it was meant to be played during that portion of the story.
Sure.
And you just go back and I feel like it would feel very polarizing. I'm curious, because correct me if I'm wrong, you do get the noose in the side quest, right? That wasn't during the main quest.
I think you see it as you're exploring, like, they talk about it, because I didn't do the specific Freya side quest that you're referring to.
Really?
But I was aware of the noose, because while we're, like, boating around, it was mentioned that, like, that's where Odin hung himself and whatnot. But, like, there's a lot of side content that I still have to explore. And I played pushing 40 hours of the game and did a fair bit of side quests. Like, anytime they were like, hey, you should go explore, I did at least one or two side quests in whatever realm I was in. But there's still just so much game. And I think that's pretty cool in a sense that the side quests do feel as satisfying as the main story, if not more so, to your point.
Yeah, because I was gonna say is there is that scene, I think it's like right after, it's right before you fight Odin in Asgard, and he's literally like choking because Freya has the noose,
right?
And it's like, so is like, if that is something that you get in a side quest again, I completely forgot. Does that change? Does that scene change if you don't do that side quest? You know what I mean? Like,
well, like, I can say it doesn't because I didn't do the side quest.
Okay.
Huh. So I can confirm that part. And okay. I agree with what you're saying that it's like, it can definitely affect your perception, but I think it can also go the other way of you play side quests in the end game with a different, because I think this game does a really interesting kind of buddy cop pairing with different characters as you're moving through the world, depending on who you're playing with, whether it's Atreus and team or Kratos and different combinations of characters. Mm-hmm. But I think it's kind of cool in a sense that, like, maybe you did a side quest with Atreus and Kratos, but now I'm going to go back and do the same side quest with Freya and Kratos, have different dialogue, have little bits of different insight. And it's kind of cool that they accounted for that within the game design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love how, again, kind of going back to like how I like that they focused on Kratos' past. I love how they talked about like all of his different adventures in the game. Like, he talks about the Fates, and then he talks about and that's in the main story, and then he talks about Deimos, his brother, and and his relationship with him. And like, that's another thing with the story too, it's just like, I feel like throughout this, like, and I guess I would, in general, I'm going to say this in general, I need to replay this game because there's a lot, it's a long game and there's a lot of story. And I think that there's some things that I might misremembering, misconstruing, whatever it may be. But I was also like really confused with the part with the Norns, right? Because the Norns really, when I got done with the Norn section, which was really cool, the whole underground segment, like underwater, that was so cool.
Yeah, that sequence was awesome.
Really, really cool. I was just like, oh, Kratos is dying. Like, that was the moment where I was just like, oh, Kratos is going.
Yeah,
Kratos is going to die. And like, because they made it seem like, they made it seem so definitive, and I don't remember exactly what they say. And I'm sure now that we know that he doesn't die, they use some specific wording to make it seem like it's concrete when it's actually just like, you know, it could really mean anything. But like, I was just so, because, and again, this is the big thing that makes me really want to replay it, is that I felt like throughout the game, I was just like, okay, what the fuck is going on with this prophecy? Is it real? Is it not real? What's going on here? And not in a good way. It was like in a like, please, like, let's just like explain, like, give me an answer, you know what I mean? And again,
because I kind of liked the uncertainty, I liked that, like, we didn't necessarily have to fully believe in the prophecy and we could expect the unexpected to some extent. That worked for me, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where I feel like there was a lot more evidence going in the favor of like, oh yeah, this prophecy's going to happen. And then, like, you'd get to another, like, you know, of the panels, and they would go inside, and it's just like, oh yeah, this is happening, and things like that. And then other things where I'm just like, wait, so is it not going to happen? And then, again, and then the Norns happen, and I was so sold on, like, yep, Kratos is gonna die, this is it. But then everything that happened with like Tyr and Odin, I was just like, okay, that was weird. And then, like, Kratos being like, I'm going to be the general in the prophecy. I'm like, okay. I guess that, okay.
Go ahead. Oh, sorry. No, I was just going to say, what did you make of the final panel that we see where presumably Kratos is, like, being praised as a god for the first time and worshipped? And what did you make of that section right at the very end?
I mean, we haven't seen that, right? Like, I guess for me it was just like, it was cool, and I get the emotional connection it was that it had for Kratos, as, like, you know, there was even talk in the game that, like, you know, no one's ever worshipped you. You're not a god. You know, you're a pretend god, that kind of thing. But I don't know. Maybe we see it as, like, some sort of fourth wall break that we worship Kratos. I don't know. We love Kratos, despite all of his flaws and his past. You know, again, it's one of those things where the ending in itself, like, it didn't do a whole lot for me. And I, like, because, like, again, like, the stuff with Atreus, it's like, okay, you know, he's going on an adventure, I guess, to find the other giants. And that didn't really, like, that, I don't know, that... It was kind of surprising, and that, like, the end of the, like, the post game, you're not with Atreus, you're with Freya, which is definitely a choice. I'm not against it. I just didn't expect it. But I think that, you know, I thought that the you know, Atreus may leave, but Atreus remains, like, or Loki may leave, but Atreus remains. Line was very, like, very good and wholesome. I guess I just expected more out of the ending. I don't think it was particularly bad. I just expected more. I just thought, like, that this was gonna be the end of potentially Kratos, of this, like, saga, and, like, with there being so much post game and stuff still, like, it just, and then, like, Atreus just kind of leaving. I don't know. It just didn't. I'm kind of, like, mixed on it. Like, it's not that it was particularly bad, but it wasn't particularly what I wanted either.
Yeah, I can respect that. I was in the camp of, I just really thought that final scene with Kratos seeing the rest of the prophecy, it just linked all of the prophecy storyline together for me really well, in a sense that, like, there's always one more element of the prophecy that we don't know about, and they're still uncovering it, and they're still, like, developing their own story and making their own choices. And there's a line, I believe, it's towards the end of the game when Atreus and Kratos are going back to Vanaheim, and they're going to help Freya rescue her brother, where Atreus is like, but the prophecy says X, Y, and Z, and Kratos is like, this is the right choice. Regardless of the prophecy, we're going to do this anyway. And I think that's when it, like, solidified for me of, like, it, the prophecy was, like, this cool transcendent, like, symbolic thing within the narrative structure. But yeah, I thought I the ending itself I enjoyed, but it was specifically the moment in the tent leading in the night before the battle going into Asgard. That's the one that got me teared up. That's the one that really solidified Kratos and Christopher Judge's performance for me. And, like, just, like, to me, that's the ending of the game, in a sense of, like, that's the arc of, like, they fully trust each other. They're going into this battle regardless of what happens. They're father and son. It sounds cheesy, but that element just, it worked well for me.
Yeah. And I think that there's just, it, you know, time, it's not even, like, time travel, but it's, like, stories about time, or, like, having timelines, or, like, prophecies, whatever it may be, they can always just feel a little, they can't, you know, they can always feel a little muddy sometimes, where it's just like, okay, like, are we on a fixed timeline where, like, you know, the future's already been written, or is this right. like a, hey, you know, we're defying fate, we're, and I think, like, the game did do a decent push and pull of, like, what that situation was. And I do like the, I agree with you. I do like the idea of just like, hey, like, we're not doing what the prophecy says. We're doing what we think is right. And like the whole, like, you know, Kratos telling Atreus, like, you know, you opening your heart is what works for you. So keep doing that. That is your mother's wish, as is mine. And like,
yeah,
that was a really, really great moment, for sure. And, I really love that, how, again, the characterization of Kratos throughout this game, and just, learning to open up and, become more than just the God of War, you know, more than just what we know him as, because up to this point, you know, he's either been really angry or very, like, stoic and quiet and trying to consume that, you know, that brutality that he has.
So one-dimensional, and then to have this growth.
Yeah, exactly. And there was, you know, even those moments in the game where, like, he was saying, he's like, I'm becoming the old me and stuff like that. And I was just like, oh, I was, and just like when he's choking out Heimdall and he calls him a monster right before the like light comes out of his eyes. Yep. Oh my God. What a moment.
That was incredible too. Yeah. And Scott Porter's performance as Heimdall, which we haven't gotten into, I really enjoyed it too. And just kind of, we're getting, you know,
he was at the Game Awards. He was at the Game Awards.
Oh, really? Did you see him?
So I'm a big Friday Night Lights fan. So I saw him and I was just like, bro, I want to go up to him and be like, full eyes, clear hearts, can't lose. I wanted to so bad, but I, you know, I didn't want to be that guy. But he was there. He was chilling at the hotel, like right nearby, right after the show.
Nice.
And I was just like, I was like, I gotta stay chill. I gotta be cool. I didn't even say anything to him, but yeah, he was really, really great. I didn't even know it was him until after I beat the game.
Oh, cool.
And because I know that he has gotten more into voice acting over the years,
for sure.
And yeah, like, he was great. Like, every time he talked, I was just like, I want to punch him in the face.
he nailed it, this guy, dude.
So,
and
you
the
know,
moment when we first meet his character is so cool. As Atreus is coming up the wall and just like, yeah, he's such an asshole, it's great.
Yeah, 100%. Like, when someone just makes you that angry just from their voice and their performance and stuff like that, you know that you're doing a great job.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like I want to shout out a couple more characters, and then I feel I want to talk about the music a little bit and the art direction, because we haven't touched on those things. Okay. But yeah, I really enjoyed Anger Boda's performance. I thought she was really well done. I wouldn't necessarily say like the way her character was used in the narrative was so incredible, but I felt like she really captured the moment anytime she was on screen, and like her delivery and dialogue with Atreus, I thought was really well done. We didn't talk about Thrud a whole lot, but like we said, her dynamic with Thor and dealing with her parents' alcoholism, I thought was quite compelling. Other characters and things that I just think the game really shines in its like small narrative character moments, and that's what really stuck out to me.
Yeah, I love the moments where you get to eavesdrop on all the different characters as Atreus. Yeah, those were cool. I like the one where Odin knows that you're eavesdropping and you can just keep going back to the door.
How many times did you go back to that door? I probably did like four
until
or five.
Until he repeated the lines. I thought about it. Like, and that's the thing. Like, this game was so good about, like, in that specific instance of, like, making the player be like, I wonder if I do this again, it'll mm-hmm. do something new. And mm-hmm. it did. Like, it was, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really smart.
Really good stuff.
But yeah, getting into the art direction, I think this is one of the most beautiful games I've played in recent memory. Specifically, anytime you're in Asgard, I think is really stunning. The double Valkyrie fight towards the end of the game when you go to unleash Ragnarok, I totally am blanking on the name of the realm, but everything's like cool purple and space. Oh, yeah. And like
that was
on
great...
this like astral plane, like that whole sequence was really cool.
Yeah, that was a great moment, especially when you finish that fight and it's just like Kratos and it's like bare Loki. Like, that was mm-hmm. such a good shot. Mm-hmm. Also, shout out to Erica Lindbeck, who voices one of the Valkyries in that nice. fight, because I got to see her at the Game Awards as well. Oh, I amazing. Met her before, but like I got to see her again, and she
very
was
cool.
She's very, very cool. She also voices, for those that don't know, like, she voices Futaba in Persona.
Okay.
5. That's awesome. She voices Shion in Tales of Arise, if you played the latest Tales of Arise game. Jesse
for sure.
In Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Oh, wow.
She's a S-tier voice actress, if
yeah,
you
that's
ask
killer.
Me.
Very, very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love those roles. All of those roles, to be honest, that's awesome. I didn't know it was the same person.
Yep.
But yeah, the art direction, I think, in this game is just really, really striking and constantly. If the photo mode had been available the entire time I was playing it, I probably would have taken twice as long to beat the game, because a lot of cool moments to capture.
So here's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
I'm not a photo mode guy. Like, I just like. I just can't get into it. Like, I'm not, like, you know, y'all have fun with your photo mode, but I've never, like, the most I've ever gotten into it was in Spider-Man PS4.
I was going to say that was the tipping point for me. It was Spider-Man.
Yeah, it was just the selfies. I was like, okay, this is a cool selfie. I can take off and like do a selfie here. But like, just like the actual, like, and I messed around a little bit in Ghost of Tsushima, because, man, what a gorgeous game.
Yeah, 100%.
But
and that one had so many cool filters and weather effects.
Oh, yeah.
And things you
oh,
could
yeah.
do that it was just
I played
it
that,
was fun.
I played that game in black and white, so I was just like,
oh, cool.
Yeah, I had to. I was just like, oh, this is so cool. So, but yeah, you know, photo mode, not my thing, but happy for y'all that are into it.
I respect it. I try not to take photos during like critical story moments, but definitely as I'm exploring the world and like there's a cool backdrop, I'm like, I like framing up the shot and doing that
for
whole
sure.
thing. It's a good time. Also, shout out to the music. Bear McCreary went very hard in this game, and was I hyped as fuck to see him playing a hurdy-gurdy in the game with the dwarf face modeled after him during Brock's funeral scene? Yes, I was. Yes, I was.
Really? I didn't notice that. I
yeah,
did not
no,
notice
if,
that.
If you go back and watch it, like, look at that dwarf sitting on the rock by the water playing the hurdy-gurdy, it's definitely Bear, and they definitely modeled it to look like him, and it's really a nice little touch for a music nerd like me. I appreciated it.
That's dope. That's dope.
But yeah, the soundtrack is very cool. I was hyped to. What was it like hearing it live at the Game Awards? Did it hit
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. Like I'm not, you know, I'm not discounting, Bear McCreary, God of War. Like, it's a it's a phenomenal soundtrack. Do I think it should have won Best Music? No, but I thought it was really, really good. You know, I'm not a huge Hozier fan, but like,
sure.
you know, he performed well. It was really cool, because like, you know, I'm a musician and I don't know what the fuck Bear McCreary was playing, and it didn't. But he was fucking into it, dog. Like,
yep.
he was just like,
yep.
let's go. I'm spinning. I'm cranking this thing. I'm like, I don't know what that is as a musician, but that was really cool. They had like snow
hype.
On the floor and everything like that.
Oh, cool.
It was really cool. It was a good
that's
performance.
Awesome. Just to shout out the instrument that he was playing, the hurdy-gurdy, which is the most hilarious name to me.
It's called the hurdy-gurdy?
Hurdy-gurdy, that's the name of the instrument.
Oh my god.
So it's like a medieval whole thing. So I majored in music in college. I don't use my degree a whole lot these days.
Really?
But
what do you play?
Saxophone.
Me too!
I heard that a while ago because I saw, I think you posted like a marching band photo at one point. And I was like, oh shit, we got another one. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's so cool.
But yeah, so I went to school for music education.
That's what I originally went to school for, but then I changed.
My co-host and girlfriend Claire still teaches, and then I do some private lessons here and there and things, and still try to play when I can, but not as much as I did at one point. But my music history classes are paying off when I'm like, holy shit, it's a hurdy-gurdy with shit like that. So that was a lot of fun for me to kind of nerd out with that one. But yeah, I 100% agree. As much as I love the God of War score, I think it deserved the win based on the nominees, but there were countless games that weren't nominated for best music and score that I was like where was Tunic, y'all? Lamb was a great one this year. Some big hitters were just missing in that category for me.
Here's what I'll say. You're not a big JRPG guy, right?
I dabble. Okay. It's not a main genre of mine, but I like Persona and Pokemon and
a lot of the main ones. Like Xenoblade Chronicles 3, a big reason why I think that game should have won the award is because music is an integral part of not only like it being a game, but its narrative. Music plays a huge key role in the narrative, right on. And the storytelling in that sense than just like, oh, it's like, you know, this music is like heightening this moment, you know. And also on top of that, you know, the composer of Xenoblade Chronicles 3, you know, he is a legend. Like, you know, he did the music for Chrono Trigger, a bunch of other iconic JRPGs to this day. It would have been a nice legacy award for him as well on top of it. You know, it is one of those things, like, when it comes to the Game Awards, especially when it comes to JRPGs, like, you know, it's, unless it's Final Fantasy, and at this point, maybe Persona, like, it's really hard for JRPGs to walk away with really any awards, because they're just not popular genres in the grand scheme of things, which I've accepted, I highly recommend, if you're a JRPG fan, you know, definitely check out Xenoblade 3. That's a really good game.
Love to hear it. Question on Xenoblade. I jump into 3? Do I need to play 1 and 2? What's the recommendation here as a fan?
You can. I do think... there are obvious connections to the first two games,
sure,
in the way that that doesn't affect the narrative, that you're like, oh, I don't know what's going on here, but like you'd be like, oh, like, you know what I mean? But yeah. I do think I would say I would play through all of them. I know they're long games, and I will say, like, there's plenty of other JRPGs I would recommend before the Xenoblade Chronicles games. But if you're like, hey, I want to play a Switch JRPG, like, you know, those are good JRPGs. You know, I think that the thing with playing 3 is that, like, if you like 3 and you're like, oh, I really want to go back and play the first two, you're going to get some whiplash, I think, from a gameplay standpoint. The gameplay is definitely evolved. The quality of life in the gameplay in 3 would make it hard to go back to the first two games, even though I think the second game is still my favorite, which is an unpopular opinion. But you know, I think that if you go through each one, you're gonna get rewarded in certain aspects when you play 3.
For sure.
And yeah, so we can talk about it more off the podcast, but
right on. Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Got to get some JRPG talk into the God of War discussion. Yeah, I've always been interested in Xenoblade. It's just the time commitment thing is kind of which that argument is becoming less and less relevant as I dump hours into multiplayer games or I replay games and things. Like, I just should take the time to play some of these, because I do love the genre of JRPGs. It's just...
It's
the time to play them, so
it is one of those things for me. Like, I get it, but also, like, in my opinion, like, just the characters and the connections you get with those characters and like saying goodbye to those characters, you just don't get those, like, you just don't get, I just don't think you get the same feeling as you do in any other genre. It's just like, for me, it's just that's why I love JRPG so much, are the characters, and you get attached to those characters, and then you have to say goodbye, and then you're just like, I don't want to say goodbye, you know, when you're, even though you're complaining for partway through the game that you're like, oh, this game's so long, but then by the time it's over, you're like, no, I don't want it to end.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's awesome. Well, closing out, any closing thoughts on God of War Ragnarok before we move into our closing segment?
I mean, it's a phenomenal game, you know. It's not my game of the year, but it's definitely a very high quality game. It's definitely a must play game. I have my problems with it, but I can't discount its quality, and that y'all should play it if you have a PS5, PS4. I really don't think if you do have a PS5 or a PS4, you're like losing a whole lot of experience if you
I've heard good things, generally speaking.
Yeah, like the PS5 doesn't do a whole lot with the DualSense, and depending on like, you know, what television you have, like, I don't think you're gonna get a major benefit in like the visuals and frame rate and stuff like that. So, you know, if you have just a PS4, I wouldn't say you have to wait to get a PS5 to play Ragnarok. I think you're perfectly fine playing it on PS4. And then if you want to, you can play it again when you get a PS5.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great point. Yeah, I would echo what you said. I adored God of War Ragnarok. I really enjoyed my time with it. I'm excited to keep playing some of the post-game content over the holidays, and those character interactions and the dialogue that they have throughout the journey just really sealed the deal for me. And the art style and art direction is incredible. Wonderful music, whole package. Great, great game to check out. Highly recommend it. So Cam, let's jump in to our closing segment, Questions with Claire, our weekly discussion of fun questions with the listeners. Even though Claire is not here tonight, which I didn't mention at the top of the show, the only reason she wasn't on is because she hadn't has a chance to play God of War Ragnarok quite yet. Otherwise, she would have joined us for sure. But she hasn't. She still needs to play the first one.
So oh, wow. She wants okay. to, she, so she, at some yeah, point, she's really behind.
Yeah.
She's
gotta catch up. Yeah. So heading into our game of the year discussion, she was like, I'm not going to be able to beat the first one, so I'm going to prioritize stuff. So she's been playing a ton of cool indie games. She's been checking out the new Pokemon, playing a bunch of different stuff. So we'll have a nice rounded out set of coverage for our conversations. But regardless, we still have a Questions with Claire. Our question today is, heading into 2023, what is your most anticipated game of the year so far that you're looking forward to playing?
It's Lost Soul Aside, baby. Lost Soul Aside. And a lot of people are like, what the hell is that? What's that game?
Give us the elevator pitch. Why should we be excited about this one?
So Lost Soul Aside is a action game that was originally announced back in 2016. So it's going on 6 years of development right now.
Okay.
And it was originally made by a single person who is now the director of the game.
Wow.
And yeah, basically he released a like 5.5 minute trailer back in 2016, again all made by him, and I was just like, yo, this is one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Again, really like over the top action, very like it's gonna get mostly compared to like DMC, Bayonetta, that kind of combat. It's finally, I think, coming out next year. Like, for a while now, for a few years, like Yang Bing, who is the director, he kept on saying like, you know, I really want to get out this year. But it keeps on getting delayed. But we've seen more and more trailers now because they had to remodel like the character, and they added a new engine for the game part, you know. Mm-hmm. Once he got like the funding he needed, because basically he got backed by Sony through their initiative called the China Hero Project.
Nice.
And that was the first game under that banner that got picked up. And to the point where, like, which I see as a very good sign, Sony themselves are publishing the game. They are going to be, like, originally that wasn't going to be the case. They just basically, like, help fund these games. Then just, like, part of the deal is they will be, like, timed exclusives on their platforms. But now Sony's like, no, we're going to publish this game. I don't know about you, but that sounds like a good sign.
Vote of confidence for sure. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, so, that sounds really cool. I'm excited that you put it on my radar. I'll have to keep it on.
Yeah, I'll send you the trailers, and you're going to be like, yo, this looks really good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's really, really cool. It was very Final Fantasy 15 inspired when it first came out. And, like, when you look at the main character, you know, he has that inspiration from Noctis for sure. You know, very Japanese game. Yeah, it's supposed to come out to PS5, PS4, hopefully next year.
Love it. I'll have to check it out. I think I it's hard to pick one. I feel like I have a slew of games that I'm pretty hyped about. Do you know if Mina the Hollower has a release date currently, or is it slated for 2023?
It does not have a slate, unfortunately.
Okay. If it did, I would put that in the conversation after playing it at PAX West. I was very excited about the demo and excited to play that full release. I think it would probably go to, I'm a big DC Comics guy, not the most recent DC movies, but grew up as a big comic fan, and I'm very excited for Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. I like that they're doing something different. I'm interested to see what they do with those characters. The gameplay kind of reminds me what we've seen so far of Sunset Overdrive, just kind of going zany, over the top, colorful, which is something we haven't really seen that team do with the most recent Arkham trilogy. So looking forward to that one. Obviously super excited for Tears of the Kingdom, the new Legend of Zelda game, really adored Breath of the Wild. Those are the obvious ones. But there's also, like, it's funny because a couple of what would have been my most anticipated games for 2023 in the indie space are coming out this month. This recording, next week we're getting a game called Recall from Whitethorn Games, which I have been kind of standing on this podcast since I played it at PAX West. But it comes out on December 15th on Steam. It is a top-down puzzle game, narrative adventure style. The pitch is that you play as a character who is being interrogated in a lab, and through the dialogue of this interrogation, you determine how you got into the lab, and you play out these recalled memory sequences that led you to where you are. And so you can make, there's branching path choices, there's different gameplay options. So it's definitely an adventure style game where you're trying to solve these puzzles to progress through the game. And it was one that I randomly sat down at PAX to check out for a few minutes between demos. And I ended up playing for 25 minutes, played the full demo, and just really adored my time with the game. So I'm excited to see what the full experience looks like. But yeah, they just dropped the release date coming this month. So I'm hoping to get to it over the holidays, bringing my Steam Deck with me to my parents' house. And I'm going to try to play it before Game of the Year conversations, but highly recommend folks keep an eye on that one.
It actually says, maybe it hasn't been updated, but it says January 17th.
Did they change it? No.
No.
Well, I might have been sent a code for it. I'm not sure if that was early. I'm not sure. I haven't checked my inbox. I requested a code, so we'll see what happens with that.
Speaking of indies, you know, I got to shout out She Dreams Elsewhere. Like, I've been standing game since 2019. That I was the one that got it on Blessing's radar. For those you know, that are kind of funny listeners in here, for sure. I was just like, bro, you got to play this game. And he's been on the hype train with me ever since.
That's awesome.
And
yeah, I've been looking forward to that one too.
Yeah, if you like Persona and Earthbound, like it's basically a nice blend with of that with really like authentic dialogue focusing on a black cast characters. Very excited about that. Final Fantasy 16, come on now. It's a new Final Fantasy. Let's go. I don't think it's going to come out in 2023, but just in case, you know, got to shout out Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
I was going to say, is that slated currently for 2023?
It's winter.
Okay, so.
And so it probably will be January. I'm thinking January, February.
That would make sense. I'd be super excited for that one. Really adored the part one.
Yeah, Final Fantasy VII Remake, GOTY 2020 for sure. Or was that 2021? Yeah, it was 2020.
No, it was 2020 because I remember having the Last of Us 2 Final Fantasy debate on this show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, both games, like, when I played The Last of Us Part 2, I was like, I enjoyed this game, but more over time, I really liked The Last of Us Part 2. I still notoriously don't care much for the first one, but the second one is really good. I really like it. Honestly like want any reason to replay it, but there's too many games, so I can't do it until we get a patch or a PS5 release. I gotta wait.
I'm hoping to replay, because I haven't played the PS5 remake of Part 1 that they put out, and I'm thinking going into the show.
Oh, just going back-to-back?
I might do a back-to-back, because I'm a big Last of Us fan. That's that is my favorite game series of all time.
Sure.
Super excited for that one, too. Video games are cool. There's a lot to be excited about next year, and it's not even 2023 yet.
100%. So
who knows what'll be the fall surprises and things we don't know about currently. Yeah.
I actually wanted. I meant to actually say something about Suicide Squad: Kill the Justice League.
Yeah, for sure.
I am kind of worried about that game. Like, I love Rocksteady, and I know that Rocksteady hasn't missed in a long time. But I just feel from what we saw of the gameplay, last year, and then I was kind of like, this doesn't look great to me. And then we didn't even get any gameplay from the trailer at the Game Awards. I'm just like,
right.
Yo, when's that game come out? April?
May 27th, May? I think. Yeah,
May? End of May. They need to start listen, I know a lot of people are going to buy it simply cuz it's DC and it's Rocksteady.
Yeah.
But I don't know. For me, I'm just I need to start seeing some things, because right now I'm just I will still probably get it, but I want to be excited about it.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I bought Gotham Knights day one despite the reviews, and I was just I'm enjoying it so far it has its obvious issues, but I do see myself going through it and finishing it. But with Kill the Justice League, I'm just I haven't even been remotely really excited about it, and I want to be. So
yeah, I have to imagine we'll get a big marketing push in the coming months, and I will say I respect the fact. I like when game studios do the, especially when we're talking AAA, big budget, show me enough to have me interested, but then hold off until you're really ready to show it, which I'm hoping is kind of the case with this one. And I think most of my excitement just stems from my love of their previous titles.
Oh, so, for sure. Yeah, no, definitely.
I will say I did appreciate them honoring Kevin Conroy in their Game Awards trailer, and that was tastefully done. And when I didn't even hear the release date during the show, so then afterward to hear, oh, we did get the release date, very cool. So
yeah,
it works out. I'm interested to see how that game shapes up, but cautiously optimistic is where I'm at.
For sure.
All right. Well, any other games you want to shout out real quick?
Man, I mean, we're not getting Kingdom Hearts 4 next year. So, I mean, this is just, I'm excited for Legend of Heroes Trails from Reverie.
Nice.
It's the latest Legend of Heroes game. If you want to play, a phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal S-tier JRPG series, it's the Legend of Heroes. The big stipulation is there's 10 games, or this will be the 10th game in the series. But let me tell you, like, you know, I was talking about earlier about how I've experienced boss fights that have been so compelling based off like their narrative and like the meaning behind the actual fight and stuff like that. That's from The Legend of Heroes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, some of the best boss fights, because of how it blends together like the narrative and like the relationship of these characters up to this point. Like, it's some incredible stuff that I've like hardly ever seen in games. And like, again, it's a intimidating series to get into, for sure, with there being like 9 games and each game ranges between 30 to 80 hours. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm telling y'all, if you want like high quality world building, well-written characters, like just well-written dialogue in general, a fun combat system, like in an engaging, like ongoing arc, you know, within the span of those games, it's really incredible. And it really is, like, in my opinion, the most overlooked video game franchise in gaming today. You know, 'cause it's not a JRPG that is, you know, owned by Square or Atlus or like any of the big JRPGs, companies. It's made by Falcom, that's kind of like its own little, you know, entity, but they've been an ongoing entity for like a very, very long time. They're really incredible games. You know, if you are listening to this and you're like, this sounds really cool, I want to learn more about it, you know, you can just DM me on Twitter at CamFinalMix, and I can explain to you, like, you know, the order of the games that you want to play and a little bit more of an in-depth pitch on it. But The Legend of Heroes, y'all, is the truth.
That's awesome. I feel like I have some homework in a good way. I need to check out some more JRPGs, and then I'll report back to you.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, after Kingdom Hearts, it's The Legend of Heroes, baby. Like, that's the goodness right there.
Love it. That's awesome. Well, Cam, this has been super awesome chatting with you. I had a ton of fun. Thank you so much for making the time to come on the show. It was really, really great.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be here. Glad to be
dog is here as well. So
yeah, Astra's here, having a good time with us. Again, always welcome. You know, always down to be on the show. Glad
appreciate that
you invited me. Can't wait to be on again soon.
Yeah, heck yeah, we'll make it happen in 2023 for sure. For sure. But in the meantime, where can the listeners find you and all the cool goings on?
Yeah, so, I mean, really all of my freelance writing currently is on IGN. I haven't done anything a whole lot recently, but I do have a preview for Mina the Hollower, if you want to check that out.
Awesome.
I got a preview for System Shock Remake, if you want to check that out. You know, you can follow me on Twitter, at CamFinalMix, as I said earlier. And I have a Kingdom Hearts podcast with it's called Unlocking Kingdom Hearts, and it's with Jonathan Dornbush, who is the editorial content manager over at Naughty Dog, formerly at IGN. Alexa Ray Correa, who is a narrative writer over at EA, who is also a big Kingdom Hearts dork, and Kevin Diaz from PlayStation Source. You know, he's the newbie who's never played the Kingdom Hearts series, and you know, he wanted to play through the series after Sora got announced for Smash. He's like, I want to know what it's all about. So it's basically a podcast where we, you know, dedicate each episode to one of the games, and we talk about the themes, we talk about what we like, what we dislike, and all that good jazz, to help people, you know, digest the series. You know, the series gets a lot of criticism for its narrative and how digestible it can be. And you know, we are made this podcast to help make that an easier task for those that want to get into this wonderful series. So you can listen to that on all your podcast services.
Amazing, love it. Listeners, you should go check out Cam and all of his amazing work out there. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Lukewarm Games Podcast. Some quick housekeeping for you. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. We are now officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. If you enjoy our podcast, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts and more. And you can go ahead and follow at Lukewarm Games on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. And with that, have a fantastic week. Cheers, happy gaming, and happy new year.